We who believe in freedom cannot rest. Oh, we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men, black mothers, sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mother sons. That which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. Oh no. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. To me, young people come first. They have the courage where we failed. And if I can just shed some light, they'll carry us through the gale. The older I get, the better I know that the truth to my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run up against the storm. Oh, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. Oh, no. Hey, we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it's done. Not needing to clutch for power, not needing the light to shine on me. I need to be one in the number who will stand up in tyranny. Struggling myself don't mean a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand up and fight is the only way our struggle survives. Oh, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. Until it comes. I am a woman who speaks in a voice, and my voice must be heard. Sometimes I can be quite difficult. I bow to no one's word. Oh, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. Oh, no. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it
comes. This is a reading by UU writer Adam Lawrence Dyer. Dyer is an educator and activist and currently leads the California Equity Ministry Network. He is a Unitarian Universalist student at the Pacific School of Religion. The poem is called Healing, and it is from Dyer's book, Love Beyond God. Don't speak to me of healing racism or wounded souls or the painful hurt until you are willing to feel the scars on my great-great-grandmother Lori's back. Don't speak to me of values or justice or righting wrongs until you are able to feel the heartache of my great-grandfather Graham, whose father may have been his master. Don't speak to me of equity or opportunity or the common good until you are able to hear the fear from my grandmother May as the only black woman in her college. Don't speak to me of passion or longing or standing on the side of love until you know the shame felt by my mother, Edwina, mocked by teachers for the curve of her back. Don't speak to me of together or understanding or empathy until you know my rage as a young actor hearing the direction to be more black, more male. The pain you are trying to heal has no real name. This pain you speak of has no story. It is anonymous, vague, and empty. Don't speak to me of healing, for I heal the second I am ripped apart. My wounds self-suture, and like the clever creature I am, I just grow new legs to outrun the pain ever faster. It is something I have had to practice for generations that feel like an eternity. So please don't speak to me of healing, because you cannot know what healing means until you know the hurt. Here ends the reading.
This isn't really the week for a joke during the offertory, so I'll say this. LCUUC and churches like it across the country are places where we can ask hard questions and where we can look at ourselves in the mirror and where the work of liberation for all people can be hoped and dreamed and planned and attempted and sometimes even achieved. I ask you all to give generously this morning so that this work can continue. The morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community and for everything that you do for the life and the work of this community. You are so appreciated. As a community of love and faith, we try hard to hold one another in our hearts and to help one another carry all the good and the bad in our lives and everything in between. Today we are going to light one candle for all of the joys and all of the sorrows which we need one another to hold, but which we cannot name aloud here today. And we light a second candle for the work of liberation, the work of dismantling racism, which we are called to do. May we be that light in our world today and every day.
Warrants from Reverend Karen Quinlan. The Quaker activist and songwriter, Carrie Newcomer, sings these words of encouragement. Come on and look inside you. It's the best place to start. The greatest revolution is a simple change of heart. We think we have to change all those things that are happening out there, and that change can happen as a direct result of our actions. And sometimes this is true.
Especially in the area of social change, where we need to very intentionally build momentum to create more just conditions. But more often, I'm learning, true change happens only when we take the time and the risk of sitting with something hard. True change in the world is intimately related to our internal transformation, which is intimately related to our presence to ourselves.
Culture is simply everything that is around us.
At some point in our lives, we learn that there are other ways of being. Our human tendency is to think that ours is better than theirs. When we are white, thinking that ours is better is supported by the fact that our social and political systems have been built through the same frame through which we're looking. We learn that our way is the right way and the best way. Simply put, this is white supremacy culture.
Here ends the meeting.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Writers, the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt, who is president of the Star King School for Ministry. I have worked at trying to channel her, but you need to imagine me shorter, quite a bit younger, and browner. Unitarian Universalist congregations have a culture. Consider who many of us are and who we are pretty proud about being, no matter what our race or ethnicity. Many of us are the people who brag about not owning televisions because there is nothing worth watching, unless it is PBS. Many of us are people who refuse to listen to popular music because it is misogynistic and violent. And more than a few of us regard rap music as nothing more than noise and confusion. Many of us change the channel and listen to NPR and love Garrison Keillor and Prairie Home Companion and laugh when Keillor makes fun of us. Many of us are unapologetic nature lovers, and the only thing we might love more than hiking in the woods is building our congregations in the woods, complete with tiny, elegant signs that blend in well with the environment, but cannot possibly be seen by a seeker on the highway. Many of us eat locally. We shop at farmers markets, and we would never be caught in Walmart unless it was a dire emergency. Many of us do look ahead in our hymnal to see whether or not we agree with the words and forget that the person sitting next to us may need exactly the words we are unwilling to sing. Most of all, many of us love our UU congregations because they represent for us places of respite and peace and sanctuary. How then do we encounter those whose experience of church is different, whose experience of the holy is different, who find the truth in their lives in music from T.I. and Nas, and in the Black Eyed Peas and A Tribe Called Quest? Where do they enter into the culture of Unitarian Universalist religious community? How do people like me, proficient in navigating the worlds of African American identity, learn to make room for the experiences of immigrant people whose names I have not yet learned to say? How do we, all of us, convert our ignorance into wisdom, manage both our shame and our earnestness, both our resistance and our desire to know? The very first General Assembly I went to included a workshop on diversity. In the days when our movement was close to dragging people of color off the street, if necessary, into a UU church. But what I remember most about that workshop was the white man who stood up during the discussion period, looked straight at me and said in perfect seriousness, "I don't like gospel music." Now, I happen to like gospel music, but I realized that his discomfort was not with me, at least not with me simply for my race. He was telling the truth and pointing to what did make him uncomfortable. For race and ethnicity have stood during our conversations for something more ineffable, something more complex, more edgy than we are willing to discuss. We are speaking as well about matters of culture, Unitarian Universalist culture, that many of us have been unwilling to acknowledge. And we have been unable to address these issues because we have been confused about the conversation we have been having. And we cannot escape the boxes to which we are likely to be assigned. Here ends the reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1014 in the teal hymnal, Standing on the Side of Love.
It's been a tough year for the UUA, for our association. It's been a tough year because a lot of things that have been floating out there for 50 years are coming home to rest. And the elephant in the room has started to step on us. And it's time we talk about it. It's time we deal with the way we deal with racism. It's time we deal with the language. It's time we deal with anti-racist work. And that's what this service today is about. I've heard a lot of times in UU churches and in other places wonderful things about how we are all travelers on a journey through life. That's a lovely image. Maybe some of you have heard it. And like any travelers, we carry suitcases filled with all kinds of things that we have picked up and things we think we need. And today we're going to talk about one suitcase that each of us carries. Some of them are bigger, some are smaller. All of us carry it. And this suitcase is called white supremacy. And it is a suitcase full of ugly. And the outsides of these suitcases have changed over the years. The outside is the part we see, the part that society says they're allowed to see. It's the part we claim publicly and are willing to let people see us carry. From the Mayflower to the civil rights era of the 60s, the outsides were pretty bad. They said things like this, and this is from Clemence Royer's 1862 preface to The Origin of Species. Royer said, "The races are not distinct species, but quite unequal varieties." She said, "Natural selection makes it clear that superior races, are designed to supplant inferior ones, and one needs to think carefully before claiming political and civic equality among people composed of an Indo-European minority and a Mongolian or Negro majority." Superior races. And everybody believed it, or mostly everybody. As a country, we convinced ourselves of the power and worth of manifest destiny. It was the destiny of the white man to create empire and to expand the U.S. across the American continents, just sweeping aside or ruling over any of those non-white, inconvenient, indigenous, brown, or black people. There was one way to be an American, and it involved either having white skin or wishing like heck that you did. And it involved white, primarily Anglo-Saxon culture and values, religious expression and beliefs. Now, those suitcases still exist today. The ones that say white is right on the outside, maybe with a Confederate flag in the corner, or maybe a neo-Nazi symbol. Or maybe just the words, "Make America Great Again." They still exist. There are still people who believe there are superior and inferior races, and the superior one is white. But equally ugly are the ones that many of us carry. Good people, kind people. People like you who are not racist by any stretch of the imagination. And yet there that suitcase is right in our hands. And so what do these suitcases say on the outside? They say things like this: "I don't see color." "Well, thank you very much, but I am olive, not white. See me." But they say, "I don't see color." They say, "All colors are the same." No, they're not. "My family wasn't allowed to join the country club because of my Jewish rear end. Because Jews weren't allowed in a country club in Kentucky until 1972. all colors do not get treated the same. These suitcases say, "No, really, where are you from?" to every person of color that they meet. And when the person says, "New Jersey," they say, "No, really, your family, where are you from?" Because God knows you couldn't be an American. They say things like, "Well, my family never owned slaves." Well, bully for you. I'm sure that's a great comfort. They say, "Well, you aren't like most of them. You're just like us." What a shock. They say this, "Hey, will you join our board? We don't have a black person yet." You ever heard that one? Or how about, "Hey, you're Asian. You must be really good at math." "No, I failed twice." It's the same old suitcase. It's called white supremacy. Eventually, we open those suitcases and we start to unpack all that ugly because it can't stay packed in there forever. And so let's start the unpacking with the term white supremacy, because this feels like it has just popped into our consciousness over the past couple months. We've started using this because people of color within our movement have been saying to us for 50 years, "For God's sake, call it what it is." And we've said, "No, that sounds a little harsh. Let's call it white privilege. Let's call it racism." We haven't been comfortable with it as a movement. I'm still not comfortable with it. For me, when I hear white supremacy, I hear Ku Klux Klan. I see burning crosses. I see cattle cars hauling Jews away. And when I hear it, I want to deny it. I want to say, I'm not all that white. Surely I am not engaged in white supremacy. This makes my skin crawl. How could you say that to me? But I am. We all are. Not personally. There is not any single person in this room that I would look at and say, "Well, you're a racist." My God, no. This is about our culture. It's woven into the fabric so deeply that we don't see it. White supremacy is a cultural mindset that centers whiteness. So what does that mean? It means our culture makes assumptions about what is normal. And normal is white. Being white is the normal setting. Now, I know quite a few of you are sitting here thinking, "For Pete's sake, I don't treat anybody any differently. I've got all kinds of friends. I've got family that are people of color. I'm a person of color. I don't discriminate." I absolutely believe you. Absolutely. You wouldn't be here if you were a racist. But our culture does discriminate. Maybe you don't believe me, so let's look at just some tiny examples. And these examples aren't like being stabbed. These are like being pecked to death by chickens. Two pecks won't hurt you. They're just aggravating. 10,000 of them leave you dead on the floor in pieces. So let's talk about these pecks. And you can holler out some of these answers. What color is a flesh-tone bandage? Tan, right? Have any one of you, and please feel free to raise a hand, gone to a hotel in the United States and looked at the shampoo and had it be the kind that will work for black or Middle Eastern hair? Anybody? Anybody? And I can tell you the answer is nope. Not one chain. Nowhere. When you go to the grocery store shopping, is your food in the food aisles? Or is it like mine in a special aisle marked ethnic? Because God knows we don't eat food. We eat ethnic food. Or maybe your food comes with the name of a country. Because God knows those tacos aren't American. Can your child or your grandchild turn on a television and immediately see people of their color who talk like them in roles like doctor and lawyer and judge and teacher, and is it on more than one or two shows? Can your kid go to an amusement park and buy something with their name on it? Can you and your children wear your hair naturally to school, or do you have to chemically straighten it so that you don't fall afoul of a dress code? There are dress codes all over our country that do not allow black women to wear natural hair because it is distracting. And I am not kidding. There are high schools with the same dress code. Because white is normal, and anything else is distracting. At our very best, our overall culture is willing to allow everybody a chance to be white. So historically, the UUA and other groups have talked about white privilege, white skin privilege. Being white is like playing a video game on the average setting. You start out kind of middle of the road. You have battles to fight, but you get to see the whole game map and you at least get 5 lives and a sword. Being white means that you are given the benefit of the doubt. Being white means that if you are 15 and standing fishing, if you are a 15-year-old white boy fishing, everybody driving by you says, oh, isn't that cute? He's not playing video games. Look at that. He's outside fishing. A family that was here in this church, a family of color who came to this church for a Black Lives Matter event. Their 15-year-old son was fishing like he does all the time. Got the police called on him. They said there was a black man with a bow and arrow. He was fishing. He walked away without getting physically hurt. But he's 15 and there were 2 police cars there and they scared him. Can you imagine your 15-year-old son or grandson standing there alone without an adult, having been accused of having a bow and arrow when he's standing there with his fishing rod? A couple years ago, when we at this church were going to hire a new admin assist, a black cousin of mine from Cincinnati came up and applied for the job. Loved it up here, loved the people. She and I are the same age, the same height, about the same weight. We drive the same car. Except she got stopped by the police 3 times between the time she left our church and the time she made it to Chicago because she was driving a nice car. She doesn't speed. She thinks I'm nuts for the speeds I drive. And by the time she got home, she said, I don't think I can work up there. I'll end up in jail. Being white means that you're given the benefit of the doubt. Jennifer Halliday says this, racism is a doctrine or teaching without any support that does 3 things. First, it finds racial differences in things like character and intelligence. Second, it asserts the superiority of one race over another. And finally, it tries to maintain that dominance through a complex system of belief, behavior, language, and politics. Racism ranges from the individual to the institutional level. And it reflects and enforces a pervasive view in white-dominated U.S. culture that people of color are just inferior. Racist beliefs are things like white people are smarter, white people make better teachers. Racism can manifest itself through individual behavior, like hate crime, or through institutional behavior, employment discrimination. Racism can manifest in individual language through slurs. We don't do that. Or in institutional policy, as a school selects Eurocentric textbooks only. Racism is subtle. And that subtle system is white skin privilege, what we've always called it. Holliday says that white skin privilege creates advantages for white people, significant ones. Scores of things, she says, that I as a white person generally don't encounter or have to deal with or even recognize. My white skin doesn't work against me in terms of how people perceive my financial responsibility, the style of my dress, my public speaking, or my job performance. People never assume that I got where I am professionally because of my race or affirmative action. Store security personnel or law enforcement officers don't harass me, pull me over, or follow me because of race. She says, all these are things I never even have to think about. And when the tables are turned, when those are turned and my white skin is used against me, I am offended and I am indignant. How dare someone? After all, I'm white. Why would you follow me in a store? But if you look at it, that white skin privilege that she is talking about, that isn't the problem. Not the primary one anyway. It's an offensive symptom of the real problem. And that problem is our culture, which says being white is better. It's better and it's normal. It's a problem which says that white is supreme, and we call that problem white supremacy. People of color in our association and across our country are sick and tired of asking politely for us to wake up and recognize that this is a problem. They're tired of being killed. They're tired of watching their children die for the crime of having non-white skin. They're tired of being arrested for driving while black, for walking while black, for breathing while black. It's time to change. The time is now. It is not tomorrow or next week. And here's the part that really is going to hurt. Nobody is going to thank us for this, and we're not owed any thank you for this. We're not owed any thanks for adding seats at the table. Because think about it. You wouldn't thank somebody who stopped punching you in the face, would you? You wouldn't thank somebody who stopped poisoning you. Gee, thanks for trying to kill me. I'm glad you stopped. They're saying to us, stop hurting us. Stop killing us. Recognize that we're here. Recognize that we're part of you. We don't get thanked for saying, man, I'm sorry I was a jerk for so long. We didn't mean to be. We couldn't even see it. That's legitimate. Not one person here is a racist. But it's time to grow and to change our lens. It's time to center liberation. It's time to do our own heavy lifting. And we're ready to do this. Almost 700 of our 1,100 or so congregations across the U.S. are doing this kind of service or teaching. And if you Google UUA white supremacy teaching, you will find pages and pages of resources. I have already put that out on our closed LCUUC Facebook group. I will put it on our public page later today. It's not up to people of color to teach white people how to take white supremacy apart. We did it. Not us, but our culture. We need to take it apart. It's not up to them to have to tolerate and forgive and forget and explain. It's up to us to say, we realize it's a problem and now we're going to take it apart. So read. Start with reading. Learn all you can. Start with the white supremacy teach-in links and then go out from there. Find the books. Find the movies. Find the pieces. Learn what it means to be an ally. Learn what it means to step back and let black voices speak, even if you don't agree. Let them speak. Listen to them. Do it without saying, but I think. Do it without saying, you know, let me tell you how. Zip it. Listen. Talk to other white people. When you hear things that seem to say that white is normal and other colors aren't as good or as normal or as worthy, say something. Say something to your friend who thinks that black names are hysterical and who says to her friend named Entezaki that that's a little hard to pronounce, so she's just going to call her Nikki. No, you're not. Learn to pronounce Entezaki. Say something. Say something to your uncle who doesn't hire them. Say something. Join groups working to end white supremacy here, right here. You can join Black Lives Matter to Wisconsin UUs. You can talk to me. You can talk to Bud and Sarah Hudson. Wave around there, Bud. Talk to our social justice group. Talk to Carrie Duma. Talk to Phil. Ask, what can we do? With these groups, you can learn about the national groups. You can learn what our national Black Lives of UU groups are doing and our ally groups. You can learn how to do this work. So read and listen and talk and join. Start today. Unpack your suitcase full of ugly and then burn it. Scatter the ashes. In the words of Bernice Johnson Reagan, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. We cannot rest until it comes, until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. And it is time to wake up. So wake up. Amen. Now we have just a moment to do some polylog. So if anyone has a comment they would like to make, I will also be out in the social hall after a brief break until about noon if you have questions about what precipitated all this within the UUA. But if anyone has a comment they'd like to make or a question they'd like to have, please go ahead and we'll bring you a microphone.
This is Carrie. Amy, thank you. I think it's really important to use that ugly word, white supremacy, and I think we have to face up to the fact that this problem is huge, and using an ugly word is going to get people's attention and promote the dialogue that needs to happen. So I think it makes people really uncomfortable, and I think that's a good thing, and I think we need to talk about it. So thank you. I also thought this brought to mind my daughter now. She's 28, but when she was, in high school or college, early college, she was with some friends and they were goofing around in a restaurant and they were saying, my name's Latoya, my name's Dunny, you know. They were making fun of black people's names. And a woman nearby came over and said, I'm ashamed of what I heard. Yeah. And my daughter was mortified. And it made a huge impression on her. And she currently works, she devotes her life to racial justice as an adult. So I think that had a profound impact on her. And I think it's a reminder that, you know, we can speak up and we can make people uncomfortable and that that can have a positive impact. So thank you.
I am Jerry. And at the risk of getting myself in trouble, I have great respect for, I guess, what we call a European culture that was the foundation of our country, of our democracy, of our republic. This culture goes back to the days of the Greeks, which was the ancestors of my Greek grandpa Plancus. Which went to a hiatus of a thousand years under the Dark Ages, and revived about 400 years ago under the Enlightenment. This is the culture that I cherish, and that I believe in. And my own opinion is that when people join our civilization, they should respect have learned from that culture.
And that brings up a great point, Jerry, and I'm glad you said that. There's no one way to do this work. So maybe Jerry will approach anti-racism work a little differently. But he's still doing the work. And that's not a bad thing.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I became aware of something the last time I was driving at night through the core of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And I had driven there in the past. I mean, I had even gone to those houses when I was a principal. I was never, ever, ever afraid. I don't know. It was fine, you know, because I knew the people, I guess, that I was. And some people were like, oh, my God, how can you go there at night? And I said, that's the only time I can go and find the parents. And the social workers are afraid to go there, so somebody's got to do it. But now, this last time, I found myself locking my doors on the car. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my God, what is... And yet, I didn't open them up again. Do you understand? And I'm realizing that I've changed. And I think a part of it is... living out here, hardly ever
exposure,
seeing any black people anymore, yeah. and hearing the constant barrage of the media.
Yeah.
So people, be aware. I mean, you can catch yourself. You don't think you are, and I'm realizing I am.
Yeah. This is Claire. Many of you know I work at Costco as a food demonstrator. I give out free samples of things. And it was kind of interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. Saturdays are known to be very busy days at Costco. And during the election, I'd see all sorts of T-shirts for Make America Great Again and all that other stuff. And I realized now, even yesterday when I was at work, there aren't as many T-shirts that say that. Every so often I see a gentleman with a hat saying, Make America Great Again, and Confederate flags and all that other stuff. But I also see a lot of people rising up just because of what's on their T-shirt. Granted, don't judge a book by its cover, but what do you wear on your shirt?
Yeah. Good morning. This is Alyssa. I just wanted to share a quick story about a family friend of ours whose name is Sophie, and she passed away a couple years ago. She was a Kootenai elder from Western Montana, and when she was just a couple years old, she was removed from her home. As some of you guys maybe remember, Natives were taken from their homes to be made more white, to be taught English, to be, you know, have their hair cut a certain way, to be, to forget their native ways, so they, to have that culture removed. And so she passed away. She was well into her 90s. She had four kids, and they had all passed away, but she lived on the reservation still, and she relearned her language, and she spent her whole life trying to teach her language to the young people still on the reservation. Like, she went and she tried to remember as much as she could, and then to reteach it. She devoted her life to that culture. It was incredible. And then real quickly, you spoke about the 15-year-old who had visited us here, and I just wanted to share, since he's a friend of ours, Ginger and myself, that he, it got so bad for, he's an honorable student at Kettle Moraine High School, it got so bad for him in the hallways, at school, for his family, that they've decided to move from the Lake Country area. They are moving to Madison because it got so bad for him and for their family. He, you know, she shared a story that, you know, maybe you guys have saw that as well, I don't know, that a truck driver was driving by and waved a Confederate flag at him as he was walking down the road, a 15-year-old boy. you know, he would be called names in the hallway at school. So, I mean, they're moving from the Lake Country area now because it got so bad. So.
Hi, this is Mike. Just a quick one. Every 10 years, everybody has to self-classify into a pick a race when they do the census. I wish they would add a box that would say mixed race so that we'd actually find out what the blend of this country really is.
Yeah. Hi, this is Scott. kind of going along with what you're saying is like not realizing certain things, having your eyes open to things. So until I went away to college, I'd lived in pretty much white neighborhoods. That's all I really knew. So I went away to college, and I was a wrestler on a college team, and it was African-Americans and whites together, which was a good thing. And I had a couple of these other African-American brothers. One was like a junior, one was a senior, kind of took me under their wing. Just a little you know, freshman guy, which was a very cool thing. And again, I needed that. And I kind of recognized that I needed that. We got into some discussions. Here I am from sort of the Milwaukee area, about there, Nebraska, and it's like, well, they, well, this country western. I was a little bit excited about it. He goes, listen, you think I'm excited about the kind of music I hear out here all the time? Like, oh, yeah. Mm. You know, I realized that they had even less of what they were looking for out there. The dorms had closed up for Christmas, and I had to find other accommodations. They let me stay in their apartment. I was in their space, their world for a day or so, which I needed. And so my point is, as you go along in life, if you're not actively seeking to put yourself in a situation where you're interacting with people who are not like you, sometimes they come along, whether you're looking for them or not, take advantage of them. Recognize that, oh, I think I need this. Yeah. Let me go there. Thank you.
Hi. So I would like to share a few things that kind of popped into my head. First being, so as the end of the school year has come to a close, all the seniors need to choose senior quotes. And I remember I was on social media, which will lead to another point, but this one girl, her senior quote was, "Anything is possible if you sound Caucasian on the phone." And like, and there was a lot of comments on the Instagram page, like laughing with her and saying, "Yeah, that's true." And yeah. I got upset at it because, like, I think this like disparity of the way different races talk and like yeah. how immediately we judge somebody by how they talk and like, oh, you can be dark skinned, but you're only like a good dark skinned person if yeah. you talk Caucasian or in the Caucasian kind of style. And also going back to social media. You know, teenagers more use social media, and about like the names, those certain names. There was this like trend going on an app called Vine, and all the comedians would portray like the bad, crazy character as first talking in that kind of style, yeah. and second with a name that was, you know, one of those names, and that was just absolutely horrible. Then swinging back to what that lady over there said about the Lake Country and how this 15-year-old boy had to move out. So I just went to Kettle Moraine High School this year, and I'm in Perform, so obviously there's a little bit more diversity and people are a little bit more accepting. But in the traditional high school, I see that so many times, unfortunately. And back at McGuanago, we have a total of 2 kids that are of color. Yeah. And one of them, he is so smart and so brilliant and has so much to share, but just because he is darker skinned, he's automatically casted as, oh, he's the bad kid of our grade, and he gets in fights after school with yeah. the other person of color, and they're like in this totally different category. And it's just sort of sickening like to grow up in that atmosphere.
Thank you. My name is Jim. I'm a white kid from Kenosha. When they used to build cars, and I didn't buy that program, I decided in a silly manner, and maybe looking back on it, almost tragicomic, to be a musician for a living. It's tough enough without a racial thing. about most of what makes American music special comes from the mix, the clash, call it what you will, of the slave culture yanked out of Africa to the West Indies and Southern America. And the plantation owners that yanked them. That's pretty much what makes this country's music special. Well, having worked in Detroit in the real late 60s and early 70s, and Milwaukee and L.A., and as a musician, I've been in rooms. What I'm getting to is that what you're talking about is great, but it's got to work both ways. 38 years ago, I was in the only full-time jazz gig in Milwaukee at the top of the Pfister at the Crown Room. The woman who was the lead singer and the leader of that thing, her name was on the marquee. We had a drummer that quit. She said, my last name is Kishline and everybody calls me Kish. She said, Kish, you know any good drummers? I said, yeah. What's his name? Randy Bauer. Is he black or white? I said, he's white. She says, I gotta have a black one. I said, Penny, you go find one. I can't help you then.
It's a real
change. Wait a minute. I lost the gig for the same reason.
Yeah.
And lost the only chance of playing jazz for a living.
Yeah.
Because I was the white guy in the rhythm section.
Yeah.
I turned to a different music to keep making money at it. That's got to work both ways.
The challenge is it has worked in our favor as white people for so long and so overwhelmingly. What they're saying to us is, you know what? Maybe you need to take a breath.
I have been in rooms
that
the color of my skin excluded me from the conversation.
Absolutely. And it does happen. And, you know, the long-term goal is that it shouldn't happen to anybody, anywhere, ever.
Yeah, that's where I was headed.
Yeah, and I agree with you absolutely on that. You know, the transition is the toughie. So I think we can take one more if we have one more quick comment anywhere.
I've got one right here for you. Hi, my name is Gus. I think one of the most important things you said in your sermon, Amy, was the simplest, which was shut up and listen. Yeah. And I think that for this issue and many, many issues, white know-it-alls like myself, who have had a wonderful education, worked in the city of Chicago, super liberal, what have you, I still keep expressing opinions about things. And I have to keep remembering the other person doesn't need to hear them, that what I need to do is listen.
Yeah. Thank you, Gus. And thank you all. Like I said, I will be in the social hall to continue parts of the conversation, and I encourage you to continue this conversation over the next couple years.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 123 in the gray hymnal, Spirit of Life. We're going to sing it through three times.
Thank you.
Today and every day, may you help to build a new way, because freedom is coming. Peace, and may it be so. Thank you.